in the beginning, you blow up the Enterprise.
Why?
Sure do.
The Enterprise. Why the Enterprise? Why couldn't you use like the Saratoga or, you know, the Schwarzkopf or whatever?
Well, I guess the real reason is why not. I didn't really think about it too much. I just thought, well, let's just blow up the ship. Let's do what was done. Because I guess what you always want to do, because this is the first time I guess I've done like a continuation or a sequel or something to something I've written or anything like that. And I always wanted to see the space battle in Survivor. And I ended up doing it with sound effects and a lot of voiceovers where I would do, I don't know if anybody ever noticed that, but I did impressions of different Star Trek personalities, you know, because George Takei is rather easy to impersonate. So if you hear something that sounds like him, that's me. And, you know, then, Worf, sir, I must protest. And, I think I did a little Picard in there and a few other, maybe shields up, Captain. And I just threw in all these little lines. I don't even know if half of them are all.
You have to listen closely. I got the Picard and the Worf when I listened to it.
Okay.
Part of me actually, wondered when I first watched it and listened carefully. I was like, oh, was that the Enterprise blowing up? And obviously, then you did Survivors, and, this happens in the first, 40 seconds, guys, so, it's the Enterprise-E. Did you tell your special effects guy, make me the Enterprise-E? Was that,
Well, all right, here's what happened. I did want it to be the Sovereign-class ship. I like the way that ship looks. And it was the Enterprise, but, no bloody A, B, C, or D. It ended up that halfway through doing the effects, which was Snake Force Pictures, it's a little company based in France. I had seen a video that was called Space Trip, which all it was a really nicely animated journey through the solar system, and I saw it and thought, wow, that was really good. So I contacted Snake Force through YouTube, and I just politely said, "Hey, I'm doing this, and would you be interested in doing five shots for the opening space battle?" And they agreed, and five shots turned into quite a few more, and all of the CGI, so all of the phasers and impacts. And even the alien blood and stuff like that. That was all done by the same people.
Were they charging you for it, or were they just
No. They did it out of the kindness of their hearts.
Wow, I want to use them.
And then Snake Force also had recommended Roland Mayer Gruber, who did the score. And I gave him very few notes. Normally, because in my previous short film, cause it's been a while since I made something, and that's kind of the reason why you make things. You feel the itch, like I need to create. And especially I've been doing so much writing, I wanted to actually film something. So when I did Old Gun New West, there's a lot of score that happens in that movie, and I love musical moments. My favorite thing in movies is where you have the score take center stage, and there's certainly a lot of really great Star Trek moments like that. But I remember for that movie, I wrote pages and pages and pages of what I wanted the score to be, and I think the main theme was even something I whistled that then the composer improved upon. But Roland, I just really wrote him, I want to say maybe a paragraph. I just told him I don't really want to hear any synthesizers, or I want kind of a 1990s Jerry Goldsmith score, because I really like Jerry Goldsmith. And he went away for a while, and the score that you hear in Survivors, that was it. He nailed it on the first attempt, and he's in Germany, so we didn't have a whole lot of correspondence, and I think he was expecting me to have notes, you know, change this, change that, use this instrument. And I didn't do any of it. I mean, he really knocked it out of the park the first attempt. Did a fantastic job.
So you are the best client ever, as far as he's concerned.
Sure. And, you know, likewise, you know, the, everybody that that worked on this, nobody got paid. I mean, we all did it because we love Star Trek and wanted to make something cool.
Anyway, do you want to go back and talk
blowing
about
up
the Enterprise again?
Okay. So, blowing up the Enterprise E, there wasn't a whole lot of thought that really went into it. I didn't think, like, oh, the gravity of this, I'm going to blow up this ship. It's still going to exist. This is just my movie. But originally, it wasn't the E. It was just the Enterprise. I wanted to leave it open as to what Enterprise it was. Who knows? Maybe it's far enough along, it's the F. Doesn't sound very nice. But then, you know, Snake Force, visual effects, they came back and said, wait a minute, this is supposed to be the Enterprise E? And I said, well, you know, it doesn't have to be, but if you want to be 100% accurate, I guess this sovereign class starship needs to be the E. It doesn't have to be. Because, again, you know, it's a fan production. We can take some liberties. And I guess they were a little more of a stickler for detail. So then we waited a little bit longer for some of those scenes to be reanimated with an E. And the ship was always going to blow up. And it was just, you know, it was just a means of starting the story. I mean, they can always build another ship.
It's a lot more letters in the alphabet.
Exactly. And I guess with blowing up the ship, I mean, I didn't think too much. I mean, I know in Survivor, I was influenced a little bit by that that comic book, Countdown, that was between, I guess it was bridging Nemesis to you know, Star Trek 2009.
Yeah.
And I remember that Data was the captain of the Enterprise. So my little thing at the end of Survivor with Data, you know, being the captain. So, you know, this was several years later, obviously. I mean, 7 years in real time. And, you know,
maybe
thought,
the E has another captain by then.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, why not me? I've always wanted to be a captain of a starship.
Haven't we all?
So why not? And we blew it up. And
have you gotten any hate mail over that yet?
No. I don't think it's been out long enough for that to really start. I mean, you know,
have you gotten any feedback?
I've gotten unanimously positive feedback, which is, you know, I'll see how it goes the next couple of months. I would like for the movie to get seen a bit more, but, you know, I'm not like a major social media marketing type of person. I mean, if somebody catches me and asks me a question, I mean, I will give you my time, you know, kind of like now, and you know, you'll get my full attention. I'm not one of those people that's constantly, you know, on like Twitter and all those other things. I mean, maybe if I knew somebody who was, you know, that would be different. But you know, I just you know, try to make the best possible movie that I can, and hopefully it entertains a few people. It certainly Survivor certainly changed a lot as we were filming it. I would say the vast majority of the humor was all improvised. It was, you know, just me and Dan and Katie just kind of throwing ideas at each other. And, you know, like I said, you know, fondness for antiques. And I suppose if there's a theme to be had, you know, like if Survivor was really exploring the realistic implications of logic, then this one is more or less, you know, meeting or rather diffusing your expectations. I'm going to go into a spoiler. In Survivors, obviously, the captain has to make a decision, and it ends up with the death of one Vulcan. years later, he is commanding a Vulcan related to that Vulcan, and he has that little thing in the back of his head where, do I tell him, do I not tell him? And I like the idea where, you know, when he does spill the beans that, yeah, I killed your brother, and, you know, neither one was at fault, you both acted logically. For it to be like such a big thing for one character to have to unload this burden, for it to really not be a big deal, because here's the other side of logic. Ah, in the situation, you did what was right. To have your expectation completely just diffused, and, you know, what you thought was going to happen be the total opposite of what you're met with, you know, when you're in the situation. That was something that I was kind of looking forward to. And then serendipitously, the ending of Survivors, we kind of went that way as well, because the scripted ending was, you see the scripted ending, two to beam up, we beam up. But then we'd done enough takes that, you know, I usually like to play around. And so I just kept going. And Dan, bless him, he kept going too. And we were just improvising with the still
That's
not being...
That's a fun improvised ending, I have to say. Don't spoil it for people. Let them enjoy it.
Okay. But, yeah, that whole thing, again, went towards the... I guess going against expectation. And when we were looking at, when I was editing, and I always had that, the ending that's in now, I always had that separate. It was going to be, I guess, an extra, a blooper, you know, whatever. But as I was, you know, watching the cut, and it was getting more refined, and I was chipping away at it more and more, I kept, you know, saying, hey, you know, Dan, what if we use that and make that the real ending? And then I say, well, Katie, what if we actually use this? I mean, think about it. You beam out, and done. Okay, now what? Put in the other ending, and it brings a smile to your face. At least it does to me. I mean, I just went with what I thought would be more entertaining, more memorable. And then, of course, little dedication at the end. That's for my dad. He didn't live long enough to see the completed version. There was a part for him that I ended up not being able to do, where he was going to play an admiral. You know, this is my dad. He was suffering for probably 2 years. You know, just a long battle with cancer. And I had always used him, you know, short films I'd made. He always was there. I had a very, very good relationship with my father. And he was even the person that in Survivor, when I get ripped away, pulled by the alien, that's my dad dragging me across the rocks, carefully, not in frame. And he loved every second of it, all 15 takes, and then I had rocks stuck in my pants for... you know, the rest of the day I'm pulling out gravel from places I didn't know gravel could go in. And so, yeah, I had this role that was of an admiral. You know, we just didn't end up, he was never healthy enough during that point that we could do it. So, you know, at the very end, I just put a little dedication for him. But he did get to see the almost done version with incomplete effects and temporary score. And he was, brought a smile to his face at a point when those were hard to come by.
Oh, that is wonderful. And I am sorry about your dad, but, you know, at least, you know, you got to show him something of this. So let me ask a question. Are there more Star Trek fan films than you, do you think?
Well, you know, it took me 7 years, probably would have been 5. But, you know, I just didn't get around to it. I had that super ambitious, cerebral, very dark version. I don't think that any of that's ever going to see the light of day. You know, there's elements of that script I might incorporate into another one. But, I mean, I kind of like the idea of a trilogy. And, you know, I don't know when it would be. I mean, if I really wanted to, I could probably, you know, because I have summers off. And, you know, if you're a teacher long enough and you have yourself really planned and figured out, you actually do get your summer off. The first couple years you don't. You're really planning and figuring stuff out, and it takes up unbelievable amounts of time. But, you know, at this point, when I have the summer off, I have the summer off. So if I wanted to do continuation, I probably could. I guess the difference is with Survivor and Survivors, I really thought about those stories a lot. I mean, before I ever wrote the scripts, you know, the ideas were kind of germinating. And I have an idea for where a third one could go, which I'm guessing with the Paramount guidelines, I'm only allowed to make one more that follows this kind of story with these characters. So it would have to be something that says something. It would have to be, you know, kind of final. I would want there.
How many more ships can you blow up?
Well, yeah, we could blow up another ship. I don't know. I mean, I have a preliminary idea of where I would like it to go. I definitely need to develop that idea further, but ultimately what it's going to come down to, I mean, I will write something, but, you know, like when I first wrote what became Survivors, I had that 28-page script. I mean, there's what you want to do, and then there's what you can do. Everything that you see in Star Trek Survivors is the product of the shooting of three people. You know, the effects were one person, and the score was one person. So really, all in all, even if I count our lost crewman, I think there's only six people involved in this, which is funny because there's one effect that I kept putting off, and I kept putting off. It was an optical effect. It was the energy alien that they find in the cave. I always knew how to do that, but I kept pushing it off to the last thing. I saw this episode of original series, and I don't remember which one it was. Whenever that tumbling light thing that made everybody angry and fed
Day
off
of the
negative, what was that?
Day of the Dove.
Yeah, with the Klingons.
Yes.
Okay, I saw that effect, and I thought I know exactly how to do that because I think each time I make something, I usually have to learn a new skill. You know, when I did Old Gun New West, I had to learn how to do opticals. I hadn't done superimpositions before, and I did it for all the gun flashes and some blood and stuff like that. And you try to do it to where it doesn't look like what it is, where you have to really pick and choose and carefully frame things. So with Survivors, I knew how to do opticals, you know, the explosion of the shuttle in the sky. I mean, I knew how to do that. I just needed to have a nice clean sky plate and then superimpose the explosion. But with the energy alien, you know, I knew how to do it. I was just a little lazy. And then, you know, Katie was kind of kicking my butt saying, that's the last effect, and it's been the last effect for 3 months. I'm like, all right, I'll do it. And so what I did was in my garage, I took a black piece of you know, big butcher paper, and cut a hole in it that was the same size as a crystal dish, had somebody, stand behind that paper holding the dish to where it occupied the same space as the hole, and then I had a flashlight, and I took that flashlight and put it in the crystal dish and just ran it in circles. And then with doing optical effects, I, you know, took out the, because everything was black. And so I would just superimpose that weird circular light refraction that you get from moving the flashlight in the crystal. Then I just did a couple little things in my editing program of warping it a little bit. And there was the energy alien. And just, you know, put a little lens flare on it, and there you go. I think that entire effect from, because it was kind of funny, I had my editing program open with the entire movie, and then I went out in the garage and shot it, and probably took like a minute to or 2 minutes to shoot the thing, and then put the footage in, and I had a superimposition of that effect all ready to go, probably within 20 minutes. For all the things that were so difficult, and there were a lot of them, you know, we did a lot of stunts and a lot of really difficult stuff. I think there's a scene towards the end where I'm fighting the alien, and every hit that I do and kick, which many of which were repeated, if you watch enough times, you'll see that I kind of do the same hit, kick, stomp pattern, hit, kick, chop, whatever, which was another little in-joke between me and Dan. We were both big wrestling fans growing up and still hold an affinity towards professional wrestling, so he does a jumping flying forearm to my head, which he really hit me. A lot of injuries happened. I think I got punched in the face. When the alien backhands me, that's Dan playing the alien, and the take that you see after, you know, I punch him and kick him and it just doesn't do anything, when he backhands me, he really hit me full on in the face, and that's the take we used. But yeah, for all the injuries and all the crazy things that we did on the location, the easiest effect was that energy alien. For a third one, I know that there are a few elements I want to explore. That little alien that we discovered, I want to do a lot more with it. Maybe there's more to it than we even dare explored in this movie. You know, I want to include, I'll reprise the character, the captain and the Vulcan officer. I want to have a larger cast. I don't know what I would do. Maybe I'd consider reaching out into the fan community and you know, getting some people to volunteer. You know, maybe they can bring their own uniforms because they're kind of expensive. I want to do something that probably is a little more in line with Survivor, or something that's more like on the ground, more serious, but definitely a little darker. That's kind of where I'm thinking of going. I don't know when I would do it. If I have a good enough idea in the next few weeks, I mean, I'll attempt to shoot something this summer, but, you know, I'm not really in any kind of a hurry.
I think it's 7 years to do the last one, right?
Well, yeah. But then there's ideas, and I mean, it goes the same when you write, whether it's short films or feature screenplays or anything like that. I mean, it's best that, for me anyway, I think it's best when I have an idea, and I just kind of, I don't want to say sit on it, but, you know, think about it, incubate it. And the ideas that usually end up, making a pretty decent story, or at least, you know, that would be worth the time, are the ones that have something to say. You know, I don't think it's quite there yet, my idea for a third one, but I certainly would like to. I would like to do, you know, because in the Survivors, I think I did a lot of the things that I kind of wanted to do in Survivor, but then there were things I wanted to do in this one that I would probably explore more so in a third and final, as far as, I guess, you know, a trilogy of short fan films that kind of follow the same characters could go.
Well, you know, I hope you reach that point. I'd like to see more of your work. Matt, I do want to thank you for your time today, and congratulate you on making your second Star Trek fan film in 7 years.
Oh, well, thank you very much. As difficult as it was, organizing everything, and it was a complete do-it-yourself project, I think that, it's something that everybody that was involved in is pretty proud of, and it got us all excited about, you know, doing more things, you know, whether or not a Star Trek fan film would be, another one would be the next thing, is anybody's guess, but it certainly is tempting.
Let me ask you one final question before I let you go. Basically, I'm guessing that this is a bargain basement fan film. You didn't spend much money on it, either one of them at all, right?
Yeah, there was absolutely no money spent. The budget on Survivors, I mean, yeah, 2 years ago I spent maybe like a couple $100 with the uniforms, alien costumes, and some of the props I had to buy back because I sold the ones from Survivor. So, yeah, I mean, bargain basement is, if I had to put an estimate, I'd say like $300. but... But I'm assuming most of that's gas money, because you know it was quite a drive to go up into the mountain location, which I have to be very, very thankful for Daniel McIntyre for scouting that, and he found all the locations that we ended up using.
Which mountains were you in? I'm just curious.
Crestline. So that's kind of the joke, you know, the USS Crestline.
That's very funny. All righty, my friend. Well, anyway, thank you again for taking time to talk to me.
Well, thanks for having me, and live long and prosper.
You too, my friend.